Wake up! It's time for a pro-American jihad! This is Uncle Dave saying, welcome to the right-wing redneck radio rag. Yes, my fellow citizens and the legal residents, our great nation was founded on Judeo-Christian principles and the rights, responsibilities, and restrictions granted to and placed on individuals and all levels of government are spelled out in our Constitution. These are the reasons the United States of America rose to become the greatest nation in the history of the world, regardless of what our defamer in chief says. They are the only means by which America can regain and retain its greatness, and they are under serious attack from dastardly enemies, both foreign and domestic. The good old boys and girls here at Right Wing Redneck Radio are dedicated to the defense of those principles and our Constitution. Political correctness is like trying to pick up a turd by the clean end, and I won't do either. So if you're overly sensitive, better change the station right now. Fair and balanced? No, not on this show. The nefarious mainstream news media constantly pimps the left-wing loonies, promotes everything that is anti-American or that flies in the face of morality, and tries to destroy all that is righteous or constitutional. You'll hear the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth on this show, humor notwithstanding. But I frankly don't give a damn what the moronic opposition thinks. If you're a left-wing ideologue, you're still welcome to call in if you can stand a good verbal spanking, but you'll not be spewing your moldering, ranted crap on this show. All right, let's get the program started, but let's set the mood first. On the count of three, give me a nice loud jihad. Are you ready? One, two, three, jihad!
Well, hey there, hi there, ho there, y'all. It's your old Uncle Dave, and it's a bright, pleasant evening here in sunny central Florida. I'm joined by one of my favorite peoples on the planet, Sister Peggy. How you doing tonight, Peg?
I'm doing good, keeping cool. We got another heat wave going on.
You're out in Arizona. So I've heard it's been real hot out there lately.
Yeah, it started cooling off, and then all of a sudden, back to the heat again.
Well, I had a fun evening last night. The long story made real short. My wife had a problem with her car that was above my pay grade. It needed a left front wheel bearing. That's just a little more than I can handle. So anyway, I got it priced out at a garage, $310. Then got hooked up with a good old shade tree mechanic here in the area. Did a great job. Did it for $170. I'm not the greatest mathematician, but I think that's cheaper. Darn near by half. Anyway, turns out he plays bass with a rockabilly band of older guys in their 60s, whatever. And so he invited me out to where they were playing last night. And so we went to this great little redneck restaurant and bar in a fish camp. In Geneva, it was called the Jolly Gator. And when I got there, I knew I was in the right place because pickup trucks outnumbered the cars easily 3-1 and almost as many motorcycles as cars. But you know what? Not an Obama bumper sticker to be seen anywhere. But yeah. So it was wonderful to hang out with some real American patriots. Band was fun. Beer was cold. And did a lot of stuff that I used to do years ago when I played music for a living. For anybody in the Central Florida area, there's going to be a benefit out there or another American patriot who's stricken with cancer. It's going to be on October 5th from 3 in the afternoon until 8 in the evening. So if you're in the area, you might want to check it out. Like I said, the beer's cold, the band's fun. It's real casual. Don't get dressed up, you know, but might be kind of fun. You like them big bars, do you, Peggy?
Dave, your sound is kind of garbled.
Oh my. Well, it's not me. I haven't had nary a drop to drink. Is that any better?
Huh?
Is that any better now?
A little better, yeah.
Okay, I moved the phone over a little bit.
Well, that's better. So what did you ask me?
I said, do you like those redneck bars with pickup trucks and motorcycles?
Oh, I used to. I don't go to bars anymore. I quit that stuff a long time ago, but I used to.
Yeah, well, my darling wife, Bing, doesn't consume alcoholic beverages enough to even be noticed. Well, they just sip out of my beer, that's about it. But she had a good time. She had a, you know, Coke and a Gator Burger. I don't recommend the Gator Burgers there. The rest of the food looked good, but the Gator Burger, yeah, a little on the soft side. But, I mean, I've had alligator. I like alligator. But, yeah, anyway. But, you know, these guys were doing a lot of old rock and roll and some old country. A couple of Hank Sr. songs and, you know, where the women all got up and danced and men sat back and watched. But, anyway, it was just kind of a fun night. So we enjoyed it quite a bit. Now, something close to home here, well, close to home, kind of, sort of, here in Florida. Apparently, the United Nations, is calling for an investigation into the death of Trayvon Martin. That's true. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. On September 3rd, the U.N. Office of the High Commissioner of Human Rights in Geneva called for action. The United Nations Working Group of Experts of People of African Descent. What a great name for a group that is, huh? And the U.N. Special Rapporteur, is that even a thing, on racism have told the United States government to finalize without undue delay the investigation of the case involving the death of Trayvon Martin. They also want the delivery of justice and appropriate reparations. Yeah, I had no idea the UN had that kind of authority over the United States courts. But despite being acquitted by a jury of his peers for an obvious case of self-defense, George Zimmerman has been the target of an investigation. The U.S. Department of Injustice, that would be Eric Withholder, and the U.S. Attorney's Office for the Middle District of Florida and the Federal Bureau of the FBI, have all been looking into whether Zimmerman violated Martin's civil rights. Well, I don't know. If you're lying on the ground, somebody's pounding your face and then smashing your head into the concrete, I kind of think he's given up what civil rights he may have had. But the U.N. Special, whatever you call it, group, has concerns over perceived racism that led to Martin's death. And this is quoting from the UN. We call upon the U.S. government to examine its laws that could have discriminatory impact on all African Americans and to ensure that such laws are in full compliance with the country's international legal obligations and reverent standards. I'm quoting the human rights expert, Benary Shepherd, current head of that working group. The Shepherd stated that the U.S. is party to the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights since 1992, and that the International Convention on the Elimination of Racial Discrimination since 1994. I guess that's why the U.N. think they have a dog in this fight. She went on to say, this bimbo, the Trayvon Martin case has highlighted the importance of the need to review these existing laws and policies that can have discriminatory effects on the basis of race as African Americans become more and more vulnerable to such discrimination. And surprise, surprise, it was Jesse Jackson that called upon the UN in the first place just after Zimmerman's acquittal. Plot stirring Reverend demanded that UN Human Rights Council launch an investigation. Never mind Syria. Never mind all the women being put in cages or whatever all over the Muslim world. Never mind that, but the Trayvon Martin context, he says, referring to the Stand Your Ground law that may have led to this African-American Trayvon Martin's death. Stand Your Ground laws basically say no one faces with probable great bodily harm or death, you may defend yourself. What a great concept. Believe it or not, many states require that you retreat in such situations. What the hell, you can outrun whoever's after you with a ball bat. It is not a license to kill, as some suggest. You must still prove you legitimately feared for your life. I don't know, his face was all caved in, the back of his head was being bashed against concrete. George Zimmerman drew his weapon and shot as his head was being bashed into the sidewalk. Works for me. He had no ability to retreat. No, he's lying flat on his back. It was a case of simple self-defense, and they didn't even use stand your ground in the case. Had nothing to do with, but that did not deter Jesse Jackson. The UN and informed activists everywhere can raise as much stink as they want. Doesn't change a damn thing. Stand Your Ground law did not create an open season on blacks. In fact, in the state of Florida, the Stand Your Ground defense has been used 2-1 by blacks more than white people. Had nothing to do with Trayvon Martin's case. And if the United Nations Working Group of Experts of People on African Descent, that's the name of their group, folks, want to find human rights violations, well, then why in the hell don't they look in Africa, where African people violate each other's rights on a rather consistent basis? And if you want to look into massive deaths of black Americans, why not start with, I don't know, Chicago? And where most of them are killed by their fellow blacks. But what do you think about the United Nations investigating and demanding reparations? What do you think of that, Peg?
Well, I remember when Jesse Jackson did go to them. It's been a while ago when this all was going on. And I forgot we signed on to that human rights treaty, and I can't remember which president did, but one of them did. I keep thinking one of the Bushes did. So, be prepared.
Yeah, 94, that one would have been Bill, drop to your knees, Clinton.
Was Clinton? I knew it went way back to the 90s or something. I couldn't remember who.
Now, the first one was in 92, which could have been Bush 1 or Clinton, probably Bush 1. But the 94 one was old B.J. Clinton. As in Bill Jefferson. I didn't want any derogatory, off-color connotations put on anything I say here. But United Nations, number one, they have no authority here. And number two, if they want to look at civil rights violations, I don't know, I can think of several other places they might want to start. I see a rather long phone number on here, and I have a feeling this is our friend from last week, Molly. Is that you, Molly?
It's me.
Well, hey there, hi there, ho there, and welcome back. We are delighted to have you.
I am delighted to be back. I'm glad it worked out. I'm supposed to be asleep, but you know.
What time is it where you are?
It is 2:13 in the morning.
Oh my goodness gracious! Well, thank you so much for once again sacrificing to join the show. For those of you who might not have heard Molly last week, Molly, want to catch him up on where you are. You are a 20-year-old young lady in the Israeli army, as I believe. Is that right?
That is correct.
All righty. And just a real brief little catch-up. What's going on? What are you involved in? Where are you, without being real specific, where are you stationed and what's happening? And just how do you feel what's going on?
I'm certain at this point that if we don't go to, let me, this is my opinion. I'm certain that if we don't go to war now, we're going to go to war within the next month. I'm certain of this. I'm 100%, I'm certain of it. I'm stationed in Kharkov, so I'm on the Egyptian border. It's predominantly a female unit. That was the point. The point was this unit was given, if you can per se, to the woman. It's a special op, like it's special forces, and it's a combat unit, but it's a female combat unit. It's intense. I eat a lot of dirt, if you want to say. It's It's not easy whatsoever. Many times I try and figure out what I'm doing, why I decided to do this, like I said last time, I will die for this country. So.
Well, you're a courageous patriot. I wish
yes.
we had more like that in this country. And tell you what, if you have any pull with a higher command, see if you can talk them into trading us Netanyahu for Obama for just a month or two. I think that could solve a lot of problems.
I've often thought about that, and I don't know if Netanyahu I don't feel that he would be well received even by the majority of Republicans in the states, just because, you know, the way the government is run here is so different. We're a socialist nation, you know. We're not capitalist, so I don't know if because my father and I, believe it or not, we were actually talking about that the other day, and he said, give us Netanyahu, and I said, I don't know if that would work. I was really pondering it. I mean, it seems like it would be great, you know, firsthand perspective, but I'm not sure that he would be well receptive, people would be receptive to him at all. Granted, I think anybody's better than Obama's crazy self at this point, but
I've got a little black skipper key, that's a dog, by the way, that I think would make a better president than Obama, but
well,
you know, I mean,
true.
He wouldn't do any harm anyway, where Obama is. Little Barack, as I have chosen to start calling him. Now, let me ask you a question, Molly, because this is something that kind of lit me up. Vladimir Putin has said that he intends to help Iran enrich their uranium supply and give them something as equivalent as Russia can come up with to Israel's Iron Dome missile defense system, so that when Iran develops nuclear missiles, that nobody will be able to take them out with missiles because of the defense system. To me, that says take them out before the missile defense system gets there. What's the feeling in your country, Molly?
What's the feeling about the about? All right, let me tune you in on a little something in general. We have a lot of Russian immigrants, Jewish Russians that immigrate to Israel, which I think is phenomenal. I think that all Jews should immigrate to Israel. I believe it's what makes our country strong. Okay, but I have a lot of Russian friends. But at the same time, this is any typical Israeli will tell you about the average about Russians in general. Russians go where the money's at. It's as simple as that. So, whatever comes from Vladimir Putin's mouth is specifically where the finances are. He wants to be allies of the United States, but yet he's selling nuclear weaponry to Syria, right? Which got us in the if you think about it, he's the reason that we're in the scenario we're in with them having chemical weaponry, right? They got it from Russia, and now I'm sure the Iranians, there's a huge financial benefit involved for him, and that's why he's turning to the Iranians. I mean, you know, Russia's gonna go wherever the money's at. That's my outlook on Russia, and I think that their government scum. I remember going to Moscow with my grandfather and thinking, wow, this place is spectacular. It's amazing. I'm in awe at how expensive everything is, how sophisticated it is. This wasn't my as a youngster. This wasn't my perception of Russia, and my grandfather said to me, he looked at me, my grandfather was a Harvard historian, and he looked at me and said to me, Molly, he said one sentence, he said, Molly, if you knew what went went on behind these walls, and I was kind of discombobulated. I didn't really understand. It wasn't clicking with me. But then, of course, you know, I went on the internet and I did my research, and I understood how corrupt of a government Russia was. And ever since then, nothing that the Russians do surprises me. Let me put it as simple as that. Nothing that the Russians do ever surprised me.
What do you feel about Iran having a missile defense system? What do you feel about Iran having a missile defense system supplied by Russia so that they can continue to develop their nukes unhampered? I kind of think maybe ahead of time might be a good idea.
Was it 2010 or 11? Maybe it was even, yeah. What was it that when Israeli programmers and IDF hacked into the Iranian system and made their power, it's simple things that we do, simple things, like making their power plants turn, their nuclear power plants turn the other way, things like that. There's little things like that simply, you know, I have no fear of the Iranian government whatsoever. First of all, I think they're all talk. They're talk. That's my opinion of them. They love the talk, and I don't think
that's okay.
I don't think he has the audacity to bomb Israel. He would be stupid. They can't do anything to Israel. They just can't. They don't. When it comes down to it, our intelligence is so superior and beyond to theirs that they just can't. They can't. That's my wholehearted opinion on Iraq. And again, like I told you, what my concern here is more than anything is, one, I'm waiting for Syria to attack Israel for the U.S. to bomb Israel, or for something to go down in Syria so that we can finally get Hezbollah. We can finally, after decades, be able to put some type of dent in the Hezbollah in Syria. That, you know, that's Israel's underlying motive, if you will, I guess. And I don't fear Iran. How many times have they, you know, talked about that they're building nuclear weapons and they're gonna bomb Israel off the face of the earth and blah 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 blah. You know, and I mean, you might think I'm crazy and I'm belittling the situation, but you know that. How many times have they said, you know, that they're going to do this, this, that, and the other to Israel?
What's going on in this country too? Yeah. Because, you know, in the world shower room, little Barack is struggling to pick up his soap, while Putin, the mullahs in Iran, Kim Jong Un, and even Assad are lying behind him and they're smiling. So I think what little credibility little Barack had is rapidly vanishing. But anyway,
go for it, Peggy.
Let me throw it to Peggy. Peggy, what you got it?
I'm kind of agreeing with her. The Russians, I don't believe a thing that comes out of Putin's mouth. And we have such a weak leader. Now, Netanyahu, I don't know, he might be accepted here because he's got a better character and stronger showing than our little Barack Obama.
And you know what you could see, and I know this might sound childish or simple-minded, but you know what you hear from Netanyahu when he speaks? You hear passion, and you hear a love for an undying love for his country in his voice when he speaks. That's what you hear.
And you also hear self-confidence, and you hear the voice of a leader. He is Reagan-esque in a term that would be comfortable with conservatives here in the United States. Reagan-esque. we haven't had a Ronald Reagan since Ronald Reagan, and we could sure use another one right now. But the things that are going in, I'm going to digress for just a minute here. There was there's a large company in the United States, Abercrombie & Fitch. They sell clothing. They have a dress code. That makes sense to me. You're selling clothing. You want your employees to look decently dressed. Okie dokie.
Yeah.
They have a dress code policy manual to which you must adhere. Well, a lady decided that she should be allowed to wear her Muslim hijab, headscarf, to work. The company went, no, check your policy manual. That is in clear violation of our dress code. They fired her. Well, now it has gone to court, and a federal judge has sided with not Abercrombie and Finch. They're saying, yeah, you discriminated based on her religion. Not really. I have a good friend who is a Native American, an American Indian, if you will. And if he wanted to show up for work at Abercrombie and Finch in a loincloth with paint on his face, I have a feeling they wouldn't allow it. Would that be discrimination? I don't think so, but the judge ruled against Abercrombie and Finch and said they had to pay her, and they offered to rehire her.
If my dear friend wanted to come to work with a kippah and tzitzim, with a yarmulke and, you know, how do you say tzitzim, the hinges of a talit you wear under your clothes, they wouldn't be for it either, you know, and that's because it's not they're not discriminating. I'm sure she wore it to the interview. I'm sure they hired her. Okay, it's not because of her religion. They don't want any. It's uniform. That's what they want. They want uniform. They want uniform. You know, they want everybody to look. You know,
Abercrombie & Fitch is a clothing manufacturer. They sell clothing. They have big clothing stores everywhere.
Right.
They want to showcase their wares, and they would like their staff to wear them.
Right.
I think they're perfectly within their rights. It's a privately owned company. So anyway, that's just some of the crap that's going on here. Obama did say that John Kerry is carrying the ball in Geneva. This is, of course, the first time Howard Kerry has ever had any balls, so I think it's a totally new experience for him, which is showing up. And Obama himself, in this Syrian situation, seems to be just about as comfortable as Helen Keller would be after returning home to discover someone had rearranged all of her furniture. He seems to be totally lost. What is the feelings over in the Middle East about our fearsome leader, Barack Hussein Obama? They like what he's doing. They don't like what he's doing. What's up over there?
In Israel?
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait just a minute, Molly. I see a phone number on here I recognize. This is Brother Mike, who is the head of the Central Florida Act for America chapter. A very knowledgeable, very hardworking, very dedicated, and absolutely amazing gentleman I am delighted and proud to call friend. Hello, Brother Mike. How are you tonight?
Hi, David. I'm sorry I missed the first part of your program. You mentioned Molly. Is this the young lady that lives in the Middle East?
Yes, sir, it is.
Yeah, I do indeed. Can you hear me?
Oh,
am I still
yes,
on?
Yes, I can hear you. I'm so anxious to have you speak at one of our ACT meetings. That would be wonderful.
I am thrilled. I was emailing with David back. With Arthur. With David back and forth about it, and I would be honored to. I would even love to bring one of my best friends on. Her English is iffy, but I can translate. But she works on. She's a Magav. She works. Every day she's dealing with the human conflict, right on the West Bank border.
Well, Molly, that would be wonderful. It would be our honor for you to be on the program, not the other way around. It's our honor to have you on the program.
Thank you. Molly,
you're going to be in Florida in January. Is that right?
Well, I'm going home to Los Angeles for a month. I'm going home for the New Year's and my 21st birthday. So that will be fun. I will go to Vegas. And then hopefully, you know, I would love to try and get out there in person, because although Skype's great, I don't think it does justice. I feel that, you know, being able to shake, you know, people's hands and be in person, and I think that, you know, that's the real deal. So I would
That is the real deal. That is it.
Yeah.
In person always works out better.
And by the way, Molly, I can tell you how to come back from Las Vegas with a small fortune. Go out there with a large fortune.
Luckily, I, for whatever reason, I have no interest in gambling. It's just the party. The parties and it's ceremonial, I guess, on the West Coast.
Molly is a resident of, a permanent resident of California. She just said she has no interest in gambling, and yet she went over and is serving in a special forces female troop on the Israeli border. But you have no interest in gambling. Well, my goodness.
Okay. I have no interest in losing money because I'm Jewish. What do you want me to say?
A little stereotyping there that I wouldn't dare to have done, but humorous.
I'm not Jewish, and I'm the same way, Molly. I said I'm not Jewish yet, but I'm the same way about gambling. I don't want to lose my money.
It just doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense. I mean, you have like a one in a, you know, one in what, 100 chances per whatever, probably less, 100, and I know nothing about it, 1 in 1,000 chances of winning at a slot machine or at a table. You know, it's just like it's almost impossible, and I feel like I'm giving my money to, you know.
I'm not much of a gambler, but I do like single deck blackjack, but that's my one and only game. I don't do the others. But Mike,
but you know
what's
what?
Going
if you
on?
Enjoy it.
What's the next meeting scheduled here in Central Florida? Who's our speaker? You might as well go ahead and plug it while you're on, sir.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I was gone for a moment. Somebody called in. I answered the phone. But anyway, I need to get a way to communicate with Molly. I don't know if you sent that to me or not, David, or Molly sent it to me, but... So if there's a way she can communicate directly with me, that'd be great.
If I give you my email on the air, am I going to get hate mail? Just out of curiosity.
Too many people would get it. David's email, David can forward it to me.
I still have your email address, Molly.
Yeah, of course.
I think I inadvertently deleted your phone number, but I'm going to take it off the air because I can see it right now. I'm just going to type it in.
You have my email, you have my Skype, you have all my contact information. So, yeah, you know, I'm not the most reliant it takes me time to respond just because, you know, I only get to use my phone at times like this in the middle of the night or, like, prior to going to bed for, like, 30 minutes or... when I don't sleep.
I will send that on to Mike along your phone number along with your email address, and I will also send you Mike's phone number and email address so y'all can communicate, because
perfect,
that'd be great. I'm very passionate about this cause. I'm very, very passionate, as David will tell you. I spend my whole life doing this, making DVDs for our side, and trying to prove everybody that Islam is not compatible with Western civilization.
And you know what? You know what I can tell you, you can call me a racist if you want to call me a racist, and I'm not a racist, but I feel that I have the right, because I'm not looking at it secondhand. I live amongst these people, and I see it every day. And I see them, I go to the souk, and I see them to buy vegetables, and I see them yelling at each other over nothing. I see fist fights over nothing. It's a violent religion. It's just a violent
religion. Their God teaches nothing but hate. And I'll tell you what our official position is that we love Muslims. We feel they're all deceived by the devil, and they're all devil worshippers. So that's the our official stance. But we know there are good Muslims. We know there are evil Muslims. But one thing for sure, we know for sure, Islam itself is evil. So
that I agree with. That I could not agree with more. And it's the, you know, and my take on it, what I want to study, what I've wanted to study for several years now, is Middle Eastern foreign conflict resolution. And
yes.
Psychology. Combined, because law and Middle Eastern foreign conflicts go together all the time. But what I want to study, I want to put that psychological aspect in there, because every child is born without being pure. Every child is born without being pure.
I have a theory about that, Molly. I feel children are born with a natural instinct for love, because you can see the way that babies cling to their mothers. But I think hate is actually taught. I don't think hate is a natural
feeling. Absolutely,
natural,
and that's
feeling.
That's what I'm saying. Every hate is taught. And again, like I was telling David, just doing my own research prior to going to the IDF, watching YouTube videos, doing research, reading books, you can go on YouTube and type in Gaza kindergarten graduation, and you will see not only will you see with Glocks and M16s, will you see children, you know, presenting on stage, but you'll see them doing mock scenes of tying up Gilad Shalit. Do you know who Gilad Shalit is?
No.
Okay. Gilad Shalit, I don't know if you guys remember, did make the American media, but he was held captive by the Palestinians underground without seeing. He's an IDF soldier. He was held captive for 5 years by the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip. And we had to release something like 2,000 terrorists in return for our one IDF soldier. All right.
Yeah, I remember that.
That you see them beating him and cuffing, and it's just, you know, that's the part that intrigues me, this brainwashing that goes into these children.
Oh, you're absolutely right. They teach hatred of the Jews. They teach
Jews come straight from Muhammad,
you know, that teaching. You know, I had a friend I loved, and I bounced an idea off of him. He didn't like it, and I will bounce it off to you. I was wondering, you know, there are ways, I remember when we were young, we could shame people into better behavior. I was wondering if we could do it with adults, because here's what happens. Islam is the only religion that says it's okay to rape married women, and I have proof for that. And everything I'm saying now, I have proof for. Islam is the only religion that doesn't have a golden rule. There are 739 religions, and every other one has some version of the golden rule, which is do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Everybody has a version of that. Islam does not. Islam doesn't have any leniency, because if there's somebody's a thief, you're supposed to cut off their arm. That is barbaric in today's day and age. So it's
Absolutely. The
only religion that one of the best documents ever written was the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, passed in December 1948. And the Cairo Declaration, 1960, the Muslims rejected the United Nations human rights, and they replaced it with Sharia. It says there can only be one religion and only one God. So, I mean, that's a sign of evil right there. Reject a person's right to worship who he wants, You know, that to me is pure evil. And they proved it. The 57 Muslim nations, which is referred to the organization as Islamic Committees, plus Palestine, passed that decree in Cairo in 1960, saying we want our own human rights charter. And item 24 and item 25 of that charter specifies everything has to follow Sharia. So, and we know how bad that is.
It's just unfathomable, and I'm sure as you can see by the unit that I joined, I'm very pro women's rights. I think in many nations in the world, I think women are still to this day in many ways belittled, and I think that this religion, more so, I think that that's one thing that disturbs me the most. All things is the way that they treat women. Without women, your nation, your religion wouldn't be able to prosper. Women give birth to your next generation. So why
Absolutely.
In the world do they not have the right that you do? Why in the world is it okay to beat a woman, and if you can't see her bruises, why in the world is it okay to rape married women, to rape women in general? Why is it okay? David was telling me about how who was it? Morsi passed the law that you could have sex with a woman, sexual intercourse after 6 hours after she died. Up to 6,000 hours.
That's a ruling by an imam in Saudi Arabia called narcolepsy. It says, you're allowed to have sex with your wife up to 6 or 7 hours after she passes away.
And it was debated in the Egyptian Congress. Was it after Morsi took over? That it was debated in the Egyptian Congress whether they should also adhere to that. Hours after death policy, which
that's not even religion. That's mental health. My mother's a neurologist. I mean, that verges on the border of mental illness. I mean,
absolutely. In fact, one imam says you could have sex with a girl as soon as she's able to hold your body weight. That's a ruling. That's a fatwa. Another one, there's the 8-year-old girl in Yemen just bled to death because her 40-year-old husband had sex with her and she died, bled to death from internal bleeding.
Which doesn't make sense because in the Islamic religion, you're only supposed to have sex to reproduce. Isn't that correct? So what are you doing with an 8-year-old if she hasn't even begun to, begun her cycle? What are you doing?
Well, no. Actually, in the Quran says in their verse there, I don't remember the verse, but it essentially says there's no minimum age for marriage, none, zero. But since
Mike, I believe it says in the Quran, and I know that you're a scholar with the Quran. I am somewhat, but correct me if I'm wrong. Does not it say in the Quran, or the Holy Quran, as Barack Obama would say, that women are a property, that they are your fields to be plowed at your pleasure? Isn't that in the Quran?
But the verse I'm talking to, it talks about divorce, and the way it mentions divorce, it says, I won't do this perfectly, but for instance, if you divorce a woman who's menstruating, she has to wait three menstrual cycles to prove she isn't pregnant. But then it also mentions if a girl hasn't started her menstrual cycles, which means, wow, you're allowed to marry a woman before she has her menstrual cycles. So that's what that implies. And I don't remember the exact verse, but that's in the Quran. And it talks about that she has to wait 3 months. So... anyway, that to me is a sick thing that no God would ever say. Here's the one I always use. Muhammad had the hots for his daughter-in-law. So he got a message from Allah say it was okay for him to marry his daughter-in-law. And the Arabs, of course, were very upset and picked on him for that. So later on, he got another message saying, yes, yes, indeed, he can marry his daughter-in-law. And he did marry his daughter-in-law. And then the people were really upset, and he got a message that says, hey, adoption is no longer allowed.
Because the son...
He had adopted son, and that was his adopted son's wife that he married. So here's a question I always ask Muslims. If it's no longer legal to have an adopted son, why did they say it's okay to marry an adopted son's wife? Because it's no longer legal. Muhammad made it all up, right? Because otherwise, why would the one precede the other? If God wrote this in heaven many years ago, and it's an established tablet, that proves to me that this guy just faked everything and had revelations whenever he wanted them. So
it says in the Christian Bible.
Well, if adopted.
Yeah, I got to run. Bye.
Okay, see you, Mike. I have another caller here. I want to throw back to Peggy as well. But I believe that is my good friend, Brother Butch. Is that you, Brother Butch?
I'm here.
Good. Do you have a question or comment, and then I want to throw it to Peggy. First off, let me ask you, Butch. I'm just going to digress here for about 10 seconds, and I will get back on what we're talking about. Did you watch Little Barack's speech on Tuesday night?
No, I managed to avoid it, thank God.
Well, I'll tell you something. I did watch the speech, and as it turned out, I had an old pair of 3D glasses that were laying next to my chair, and just for laughs, I put on my 3D glasses to see what it looked like, and you know, if you watched Obama's speech wearing 3D glasses, you could still see the imprints of Vladimir Putin's butt cheeks on his face.
Well, Dave, I believe that the question was asked sometime during our news programs on Sunday, which seemed I try to catch those, and on several of them they asked and everybody kind of turned and stared at the floor where we're not the number one superpower in the world anymore. In fact, we would be lucky to be third.
Wait, listen, I have to tell you, that's what I said, is not you guys, because you guys are educated, obviously, and you understand that probably, you know, that I would say 70%, if not more, of the media is falsified, but Americans truly still believe, the majority of Americans truly still believe that they're the superpower of the world, when in reality, the rest of the world is laughs at America. They just
now
laugh.
They do.
Now they do. Yeah. No. Now they do. Now, as of this day and age, I mean, my friends that are in my unit, who, you know, my best friend, you know, they laugh. They think I don't even think it's comprehensible to them. Like, you know, half of the things that the American government does, like, they can't do anything but laugh because it's so ridiculously unlogical to them.
Let me throw something out, and then I want to get Molly's comment and Butch's, and then also yours, Molly. On 9/11, yes, that 9/11, the only 9/11 there is, there was scheduled to be a million Muslim march on Washington, D.C. Well, some real Americans, our motorcycle clubs throughout the country, decided, okie dokie, so they organized a 2 million motorcycle parade through Washington, D.C. on, yes, the very same date. And the government refused to give the bikers a permit. They did give the Muslims a permit. The bikers said, we don't need no stinking permit. We got our constitutional rights. And 2 million bikers showed up in Washington, D.C. Now, do you know how many Muslims showed up in Washington, D.C. on the same day? Less than 20. Less than 20. There's this gigantic field big enough to hold a million people. Less than 20 Muslims showed up, and half a dozen left-wing activist dorks showed up. So all in all, there was 30 people there for this million Muslim march, and 2 million motorcycles roaring through town. And one of my favorite pictures was that of a Marine, United States Marine, standing at attention, saluting the motorcycle riders as they went by. Peggy, did you see that? What do you think? Let me throw it to Peggy.
Yes, I was so tickled when I saw that. And I mean, I saw pictures of just tons and tons of motorcycles coming in. And when I heard that only a handful of Muslims showed up, I just roared.
Yes.
My uncle, may he rest in peace, he was a biker himself. I was unaware of this, but this clicked in my mind because he actually rode with his best friend. I remember the story because we were talking about it. Do you guys know who Brad Sherman is? He's an LA congressman. He actually belongs to my synagogue, and he's a liberal. He spoke at our synagogue, and my same uncle when he may his soul rest in peace. When he was still alive, he tore him to pieces because Brad Sherman had this whole spiel as to why. It was still in the U.S.'s favor to do business with private Iranian export and import companies. But going back to my point is I recall this because him and his best friend, they rode through. I remember that. I remember the story clearly. I remember him telling me it. I think I told David this last time. I think it's disgusting, in my opinion, how they seem to always make themselves the victim. And because they always are so good at making themselves the victim, they seem to, be able to do as they please, any which way, you know. Whether it be get a permit for the for a march, whether it be to protest here, to protest there, because they're always in any part of the world, they're victims. You know, we have one small piece of land. We're surrounded by a gazillion and one countries that are run by this horrific. I don't want to say religion, but this.
The Islam is a political movement masquerading as a religion. It's pure and simple.
Right.
I got into a little battle, which I enjoy, on Facebook this week with somebody asked a question. Mike Hertel, who is our supervisor of elections, asked a question, would a person's religion determine whether or not she would vote for him? And I replied, actually, personal integrity and honesty are much more important to me, though I would never vote for a Muslim. Someone came after me. How dare you say that? That's not the American way, blah, 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 et cetera, and so on. To which I replied what he also said, and it's Christians, you know, that want to spread their religion. They should all move somewhere else. To which I replied, Christians do not want a worldwide caliphate. Guess who does? And by the way, regarding whether or not you should vote for a Muslim, read the Quran and get back to me. By the way, start with 9. No, not Islam. Want to jump and say, oh, we must solve the right. No, we must not. We have to learn what the hell their goal is. Worldwide caliphate and imposing Sharia on the planet. So if you understand that and understand that the means by which they will seek out the infidel, try to take above the neck of your sword, then would you vote for someone who advocates that for political office? Hell no. So, Butchie, we're running short of time. Come in, our question for Mahler, pay me.
Well, no, I'm just sitting back and enjoying the view here.
You wouldn't enjoy the view if you were dressed. Wait, let me talk to Peggy. Then Peggy for down to about 3 minutes left. What question or what you got?
Gee, I think we covered everything. I just wanted to relay what I saw on a video, which is part of our problem in this country. Some guy was doing a one of those video interviews and with a petition, and he was going around asking people to sign it to put Karl Marx on the Democratic ticket. Did you see that?
I did. I couldn't
believe the people that signed that. And some of them were, older people. It wasn't all the young people doing it.
And he was saying, I don't know if you saw it or not, but I probably Molly didn't because she's, getting our local. But it was online. You might have seen it. This fellow was at a clipboard. He's an actor. And he's asking passersby, would you sign this petition so we can get Karl Marx on the Democratic ballot to run president Obama's term runs out. Obama has said a lot about carrying forth his communist ideas, and we want to replace Obama with Karl Marx so he can continue the communization of America. And people are citing the damn thing. I mean, it was just absolutely unbelievable. That's the trouble. This country. People who know absolutely nothing have as much right to vote as people who actually know what's going on, and their vote carries much weight. It is the mass of stupid people that is destroying America. Ask these same people, who won America, who won Dancing with the Stars. They can tell you the last 10 years in a row. But when it comes to should Karl Marx be our next president, they have no bloody clue. So, anyway. That is one of our major problems. Russia's in the, low information voter. But yeah, as well as actually destroying this country. I think there should be some kind of a written test before you're allowed to vote. But at any rate, we are just about flat out of time. We got about 30 seconds left. Let me throw it to Peggy.
I just want to say it's been a great show, and I'm so glad Molly made it back. It's so great to hear her and all her knowledge, and I'll say goodnight to everybody.
Okie dokie. Well, this is your old Uncle Dave saying thank you all for joining the show. I had a lot of good guests, a lot of nice people in the chat room, and I hope to see you all next Sunday. Blah, blah, blah. And remember, folks, we're in a war, and if we don't stand up and fight, we're going to lose. And you can't stand up and fight until you know who the enemy is. Iraq obviously has no clue.
Well, my fellow American patriots, the hot licks on that piano means it's time for us to boogie. We'd like to thank our callers for joining in and being part of the show here on the Right Wing Redneck Radio Rag, and we encourage y'all to do it again next week. Oh, and tell your friends and neighbors about our show, too. In fact, if you know any anti-American, anti-constitutional, left-wing, liberal, socialist, communist, anti-Judeo-Christian, misguided, lame-brained morons, tell them to listen in, too. Accurate information and the facts get the left-wing hooligans and their fifth columnist pals in the media steaming like fresh cow patties in a snowbank, because their lies can't hold up under the light of truth. So, if you know any dumbass lefties, bring them on board. Hell, we just might convert a few of them and turn them into good, loyal Americans. So until next week, this is Uncle Dave saying, keep your eyes and ears open, your powder dry, and don't forget, we are in the middle of a pro-American jihad!
chat. Molly, were you able to get in touch with Osama? I sent you his contact information. Molly, you there?
I am back. Sorry, I don't know. My connection is iffy sometimes.
That's okay. I sent you Osama Dakdak's contact information. Were you able to either catch up on show last night or get in contact with him? I spoke to him about you. He's anxious to talk to you.
Oh, I just got that this morning, actually. So when I had a few moments to check my email, so I was not able to get in contact with him. But I too, am anxious to get in contact with him, so I absolutely will.
Well, I've spoken to Osama, so he knows all about you. Now, when you get Osama's show, Osama is a firebrand. I have another couple of friends who have shows who are very excellent, but they never sound angry. They're just logical and cool, and they make their point, and they do it extremely well. Osama, on the other hand, is a firebrand. He sounds pissed off about half the time, but he's good.
That's okay.
Very
nice. My commander sounds pissed off half the time. It usually she is, but you know, I can take it.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Osama will enjoy it. Now he has a 2-hour show. He comes on at 10 p.m. our time on Saturday nights. He goes from 10 to midnight. So
Ted, hold on. Ted is 5 is 12 is 5. 1 is 2. Let's try to figure it out. Yeah, so okay. So he comes out at 4 or 5 in the morning. Okay. All right.
It's 10 p.m.
Usually
my show starts at 7. So whatever time that is for you, add 3 hours.
Right. Yeah.
Okay,
so you come on at 2 by time. So, yeah. All right.
So
he
will be on at 7.
I will make the time to call it. You know, again, this weekend has been crazy because, you know, it was Yom Kippur. So I had barely broken the fast at that point. I was weak as could be.
It would be best if you and Osama contacted one another and set up a time, because Osama usually has a lot to say and doesn't take a caller right away. So it would probably be best if we kind of coordinated. And Peggy, if you'd like to join in on that, it would be wonderful. Also,
yeah, I was on his show not too long ago.
Oh, really? On yourself? Great.
Yeah. And he took my call because he straightened me out, because I said, you know what confuses me? Because all these news media and everything say there's moderate Muslims and then radical Muslims. And I said, I get confused because how do you know who's who? And he said, there's no such thing. It's all put up, you know, because he was raised a Muslim. He knows how he was raised. And he said, it's all propaganda to make it look good. So
absolutely. Have you guys ever looked up any of the Saudi media, any of the Palestine media? Have you guys ever had the chance? You should just, it's just mind-boggling. It's uncomprehensible. You know, that these are what these people are raised to believe are facts. I watched about 5 minutes of a 10-minute YouTube clip and loved it. I had it. I couldn't deal with it anymore. I don't know if you guys know, but something very interesting. There is a small group of Greek Orthodox who got trapped in Gaza when Egypt took control of Gaza after the war, when they conquered when we gave them the Sinai back, and they took control of Gaza for a short amount of time, and then finally said, we can't handle these hooligans, take them back. So they told Israel, take them back. We don't want them. Take it back. And they got trapped because Egypt said, all Arabs, any religion, come to the Gaza. You'll have a better, come to Gaza. You'll have a better life. You'll be under our control. So these small group, the small group of Greek Orthodox got, if you will, trapped in Gaza. And I was watching an interview. They have to cover themselves completely. They keep Ramadan because they don't have any other choice. They had a wedding and they sang, and Hamas came through and they raped the bride and they raped the bridesmaids and they killed all the men in the wedding with one bullet to the head. And it was just preposterous. It was just mind-blowing to hear this story. And I mean, it's something that very few people know, that there are indeed another religion other than the Muslims within the Gaza Strip who are living a life that's unfathomable to you, to me. I by no means can possibly understand. I can't even understand what the average child who has enough wits to you know, and many of people nowadays who are Jews, as well as I'm sure some that are born into the Muslim culture, hear the word religion and they think of, all they can think of is trouble, of problems, of hate. That's what religion means to them, which is so sad. And I mean, you know, a group of people that have to live their life, you know, basically, you know, in fear of getting killed every day for praying, you know.
Molly, are
praying
you
the gods they believe in.
Yo, Molly.
Huh?
Are you yes. familiar with the Muslim philosophy of Al-Sakaya, or Al-Sakaya, depending on how you pronounce it? Have you heard of that?
I have not.
Okay. Muslims, Al-Sakaya, they are commanded, mandated, to be nice when they are weak and be brutal when they are strong. They are commanded to lie to the infidels and pretend to be their friend, and as Peggy just said, to be a moderate Muslim when they are weak, but then when they are strong, to be brutal and to be vicious and be violent and take over. They are
commanded. And that goes back to what I'm saying, doesn't it, when they're weak, for example, in Israel, the Arabs in Israel, within our country, that live in our country and have all the same rights we do, they you'll have tourists come and say, oh my God, they're so kind, they're so generous, they're so this, they're so that. Of course, there's an underdog. Of course they're going to be. You go to Saudi Arabia, if you take a Palestinian that has relocated themselves to Saudi Arabia, I'm sure their mentality is 10,000 times different.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have a problem here in the United States in that a lot of the Democratic, and I did not mispronounce that, a lot of the Democratic states where the Democrats have been in control have incredibly high state taxes and city taxes and, corporation taxes. So a lot of the people and companies in those states are moving out and down to conservative states, where they can live their life and not pay half or more of what they earn to the government. But the problem is, they come down here and they are Democrats. So they leave a Democrat-controlled state because they hate it there. They come down to our nice little conservative-controlled state, and then they elect liberal Democrat officials. So they are coming to our state to flee the horrors of their state, and then inflicting our state with a horde of the state they just left. And to me, the Muslims are doing the same thing. The happiest Muslims are those living in the United States because they got out of the Sharia crap but they come here and then they want to impose Sharia law here in this country. That's what they just ran away from. So to me, it's just lunacy. But anyway, Peggy, comment.
It reminded me, did you happen to catch that piece where a Massachusetts school on 9/11, they read a Muslim prayer over the intercom, but they didn't do the Pledge of Allegiance?
Oh, God, no, I missed that. I would have to have gone off.
And then the excuse, the principal, I guess people raised Holy Cain about it, parents did. And he said, well, it was miscommunication. The girl that was supposed to read the pledge had to do something else, and nobody put somebody else on there to do the pledge. Now, isn't that lame?
Yeah. And, you know, our Pledge of Allegiance has, what, 36 words thereabouts? If you don't have it memorized, and you should if you live in this country, but in a case you don't, read the damn thing. You know, get a copy of it. You can find it almost anywhere. to get up and you know, maybe, okay, I forgot the pledge, so I'm going to read the story of Peter and the Wolf. No, you're not. If you don't know the pledge, then learn it, or I don't know. Anyway.
I wonder, isn't the principal an American? He could have done it.
Oh, sure. Anything. No, it's just, and if you believe it was an accident, I got a bridge to sell you.
Yeah, I know.
Well, I will pass your information on to Mike. His last name is Scubiak. I will also send you his phone number and his email address, and so we can coordinate when you're here to have you as our guest speaker. And
that'd be great.
Yeah,
that'd
I would love to. I want to
read you guys something that my very best friend wrote. She posted on Facebook a while back, and I'll translate it after, but she said L'kol hashmalim leminhim, which means for all you various liberals. And basically what it is she took off of a Palestinian page that she probably follows, because she's she's very pro the IDF, but even more so she's very pro getting her point across as to what the IDF, what really goes on as a Magavnik, as a somebody, as you know, Magav is considered a rather lower combat unit, when in reality it's not. They probably deal with the toughest, they deal with the most gruesome problems. They deal with the most the everyday, you know, Arab Palestinians that want to get into Israel for medical reasons, for this and that, they have to have the proper paperwork. And when they don't, and she tells them, no, you can't enter, they attempt to attack her. Anyway, so what she posted is, it's a picture of her and another Israeli soldier arresting a Palestinian. And then on the other side, it's how, you know, the West Bank police arrest an Israeli, handle an Israeli, and it's one on the Palestinian police, it's them beating, torturing a woman. She's literally in her bra, and the IDF, it's them, you know, guiding a handcuffed Palestinian, you know, to wherever it is that they're going to take him. But, you know, for anybody out there that's listening, I want to make a point, because there is consistent talk of horrendous acts and crimes, and Israelis, soldiers walk around tied up Palestinian prisoners, et cetera, young woman. I want to make it excruciatingly clear that nothing's perfect in war. That's true. There's people that are always at fault, you know, 100%. But what I can tell you is that I think I mentioned this last time, I've been in jail for simple things, for being attacked by by an Arab while on the border and restraining him, and I didn't restrain him correctly, and I was put in jail. Simple as that. And he on the Israeli government's dime got medical treatment and was released. Okay, so I just want to make it abundantly clear, and I know that, you know, David, Peggy, I know you guys understand where I'm coming from, but I want to make it abundantly clear that we have strict guidelines that we follow. We are a first world country. There's no type of barbaricness whatsoever involved in our military or the way that we or the way that we handle situations. We attempt to remain as humane as possible. And like I told you, the first class that you ever take in the course that you take in the IDF is morals and values. So I just wanted to throw that out there.
Yeah, well, that's the course that your parents would teach you. Mine did. Actually, my mother did. My father was passed away. By the way, Mom, I think Peggy knows this, but just to catch you up on my history so you kind of sort of know maybe a little about me. I'm elderly, but I don't know it. I'm still very spry. I swim, I run, and I don't take shit from anybody. But I'm 6'5", I'm 230 pounds, and physically fit. But I will be 71 in November, and I don't think I'm over 25. But anyway, my father was he was. He died the month that I was born, so I never knew him. But my father was in his 50s when I was born. I'm 70, so we're going back 120-some-odd years here to when he was raised. He was raised as a camel-riding Muslim Bedouin in what was then called Palestine. My birth certificate says father's place of birth, Palestine. Okay. He was, as I said, raised a camel-riding Bedouin Muslim. He gave tour guides to Christian scholars of the Holy Land because it was his backyard. He became converted to the Christian faith, wound up a doctor of Christian divinity here in the United States, a touring evangelist where he went from place to place, had large tent meetings. He also went to prisons and hospitals and preached. As I said, he died a month before I was born, but obviously my mother was also a very devout Christian. So I can honestly say that I am Afro-American, even though I'm very white-skinned, because my father was from the continent of Africa. He was raised a camel-riding Bedouin Muslim, converted to Christianity, became a doctor of divinity and a traveling preacher here in the United States. So while I never knew him, and by the way, his right arm was amputated just below the elbow. He was shot during one of the little conflicts that the little tribesmen had over there. And he was holding a child in his arm when he was shot and wound up losing his arm from the elbow down. And the first thing he did was thank God that the bullet hit his arm and not the child. So that's my daddy, who I never knew, but his values were certainly, his values were certainly reflected in my mother. So that's how I was brought up.
My point to put across there is that certain rather ignorant individuals who are unaware of what's going on in the Middle East think of the Middle East and they think of just a bunch of barbarians, and that's so far from the picture. So anybody who's listening, who might be listening for the first time, might not know what's going on in the Middle East. That my point was just to get across that we're so far from launching, blowing up things, in essence.
However, there are those in the Middle East who are not, who are still barbarians.
Right.
And we have some of those right here in the United States. I was, some weeks ago, was challenged on Facebook. I love getting into fights on Facebook. I'm sorry. or anywhere else, for that matter. I'm kind of a confrontational person. But
I can relate.
Huh?
I'm in a combat. I can relate. I'm in a combat unit, so I can relate.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
And I forgot the point I was about to make. But the thing of it is, you have today. I'm doing a mini sermon in church soon, and my subject is spiritual warfare, and I am a confrontational person. I would point out that there were only two Israelis who were allowed to, or not, they weren't Israelis then, I don't guess, because I'm not sure, Jewish people that had escaped from Egypt in Exodus and Numbers. There were only two who were allowed into the Promised Land. Because if you remember, they sent 12 spies to check out the Promised Land. They came back, and 10 of them said, "Holy crap, those people are big. We couldn't defeat them. We're like grasshoppers. Like, no, we can't go in there." I mean, they forgot about, you know, the parting of the Red Sea and all that kind of stuff. Two of them said,
"Yeah,
we could kick their ass. Let's go get them." That was Caleb and Joshua. And God said, "Okay, 40 days, and y'all just turn coward. So none of you who are over the age of 20 will be allowed into the Promised Land. You will wander the wilderness for 40 more years." But
right.
Caleb and Joshua were allowed to enter the Promised Land. Why? Because these two, pardon my French, had balls. They came back and said, "We can kick their ass. Let's go get them. This is war. Let's get it on." And the ones who were cowards were never allowed to enter the Promised Land. But the conflict-minded, confrontational two, Caleb and Joshua.
The go-getters.
Yeah,
go-getters.
Damn right. So,
the go-getters.
You know, they want to, there are a lot of Christians who want to say, "Oh, we must turn the other cheek." Not necessarily.
You know what my mother always taught me, Molly? She said, "Molly," she said, "if you, when I was little, she said, if you see somebody getting bullied, if you see another person hurting somebody else, and you stand there and turn the other cheek, you're just as bad as the bully. You're just as bad as the person who's inflicting harm on the other person. You're just as bad." And I will always believe that. And again, as I'm sure you know, that is why I'm so outspoken, and I'm so it doesn't matter if somebody asked me, if you were to go to Saudi Arabia, would you wear a Magen David, a Jewish star, around your neck? I said, absolutely. I don't care. I will preach my views. I will state my opinion regardless of where I am, regardless of whether it's good or bad, regardless of the consequences, I will always make sure my voice is heard. Because those who don't are the ones who don't make it. I truly believe
right.
that.
Okay, we're running. I'm going to have to run in a minute. Peggy, let me flip it to you. Your comments or questions or whatever.
I just want to say that when I grew up, I was not a little mild meat person. If somebody, if somebody came in my yard, or especially a guy, when I was a kid, he started trying to start a fight, I used to chase him home and beat him up. And I'm only 5'1", and a lot of people think, "Oh, she must be a," you know. Well, my mother was Scotch Irish, and she was somebody to be reckoned with. And I think
I'm sure.
I got to run. We're going to let you get back to sleep. Peggy, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, I
got to
get dinner here.
Okay.
All right.
Molly,
well,
I'll send your contact info to Mike Skubiak and send you his phone number and email address as well.
Sounds good. It's always a pleasure to speak with you guys.
Yeah,
okay.
Same here, Molly. Good night, everybody.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye, guys. Bye.
See y'all soon. Bye now.